Perfect. Okay.
Hey,
all right. Good morning, everybody. We're running a little behind. Sorry about that. We had an interesting Grange District meeting, which we're actually going to report to you in just a minute. But I'll start by calling us to order in our regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, May 22nd, 2018, and ask if everybody to please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you again and good morning. First item, as always, is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to address anything you want. It says topics on today's agenda, but we'll hear from you about anything. I know that our friend Arden Griner wants to speak, but he wants to speak to a specific topic that we'll hold for that topic on the agenda. Is there anybody else who would like to address us on any topic? Seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll move on to recognition of Craig Ogilvie and his 6 years of volunteer service as a Story County representative on ASSET. Deb, you want to come up and just say a few words? As you're walking up, I'll say that I have always, in all my dealings with Craig, social, professional, and in his time as a volunteer on our ASSET board, was so impressed with his critical thinking and the questions he would ask. And there were many times sitting in the ASSET process, Craig, where I would see you ask the question that I knew five other people in the room had, but nobody was going to have the gumption to ask it. And I so appreciated that characteristic and your overwhelming desire to leave things better than you find it. Thank you so much. Deb.
Well, thank you, Craig. You served two terms representing Story County, and I think, the representation was just spot on with the direction the county goes and the services that the county identifies as priorities to meet the needs of the citizens. So we certainly appreciate all of the time that you spent with ASSET. It's a time-consuming board appointment. And you always dug in, met with the agencies, wrote very comprehensive reports, and certainly you were very open and honest with the ASSET group in terms of questions and concerns that you would bring forward. And I know the latest concern that you shared, actually the last 2 years, is the concern for child care and access to child care in the county. And we realize that that is just a huge need and one that I think ASSET needs to take a good hard look at in terms of finding some other alternative avenues to look at to see if we can bring in more providers or help programs expand. It delves into the workforce issue and bringing companies and individuals and keeping companies and individuals here in Story County. So it's definitely a need that we need to continue looking at. So thank you, and we certainly will always remember the presence that you brought to the ASSET board.
Absolutely. And let's do this. For anybody in the audience who doesn't know exactly what our ASSET process is, so Story County has a unique way of funding our human service agencies, and that is called the ASSET process. And I'm going to oversimplify here, but we're on a clock. It is basically five entities that come together to make sure that the right hand knows what the left hand's doing. And it's Story County, the City of Ames, United Way of Story County, our regional mental health, CICS, and student government of Iowa State University all come together to make sure that we're appropriately funding our human service agencies, but we're not trying to duplicate services, that each entity is taking their piece. I'm really proud in my time here on the board. So Story County had fallen behind our other partners in terms of the funding that we were providing for this vital piece of our social fabric. And anybody who hears me talk very long about anything knows that I'm really interested in budget, and I'm really interested in taking care of spending. Here's something that you probably wouldn't recognize in me. I am so proud that over the last 8 years, we've increased our funding to the ASSET process by, I think it's 82% is the last number I've seen. I mean, it's dramatic. We've almost doubled what the county puts in and are on a true equal footing now with the City of Ames and United Way, which are the two other major players. That said, we couldn't do it without our volunteers. And Craig, representing Story County on this ASSET board for the last 6 years, has been key to every everything we tried to do and the difference that we're trying to make. And, Craig, we're going to miss you. I hope there's somebody else on board. I believe we just appointed somebody last year to the board who's going to have that same critical thinking nature and going to be willing to ask the questions. But I worry about us losing what you brought to the table. And, again, just so appreciative. Loris, Marty, anything before I read the award and we take a picture?
No, I think it just, as a funder of Asset, you get asked if you want to attend the discussions with the program directors as they present. And I've always had the good fortune to sit behind Craig, so I get to hear his thinking before and after. And in addition to what he says in the meeting, there's quite a bit of follow-up. And I guess I have followed you in the sense that I listened to what Loris has said because I understand her husband and you are friends and you are held in high esteem in her world, and I've seen nothing to discount that. So I can't wait to shake your hand, take a picture with that accomplishment you just did. Thank you on behalf of the county. Thank you on behalf of an organization that you serve quite capably.
Loris.
Ditto. Thank you.
Okay, that's as good a speech as I've heard you give.
Thank you.
So the award says, Craig Ogilvie, in recognition and appreciation for 6 years of volunteer service representing Story County on the Asset Board, 2012 to 2016. Craig, any words of wisdom for us before we take a picture?
So I'd like to thank certainly the county supervisors and also Deb for helping me learn the ropes. I would also say that I have learned a great deal. I mean, certainly it's been a personal growth to learn about all the wonderful, dedicated people on the social services, the nonprofits that serve our citizens so well. So in some sense, I feel like I'm accepting this acknowledgement, but really I'm accepting it for the people who do all this great work.
Outstanding. Glad you. Let's take a picture down here.
Right here in the middle. Yeah.
Sound like you've done this before. We do this every once in a while.
It's just really set up here. Yeah.
This.
I have
this.
My count is three. 1, 2, 3.
Thank you very much. Absolutely.
Great. Great.
Yep. Here's the box.
Okay.
He's Craig. He's head.
Yep, he is. We get the box. We can go to the
first class operation here.
Thanks, Craig. We try. All right, so next item on the agenda says consideration of a proposal from Bolton Inc. It's not a consideration because this is not a Story County supervisor issue. This is a Story County Drainage District trustee meeting. So beginning at 9:30 this morning, and the reason we got started late here is we had a presentation from Bolton Inc., who serves our drainage districts, as an engineer when we have a larger project that warrants outside engineering services. And we ask that they come and present something they have called Watchman Service, which is really getting down to the nitty-gritty of drainage district maintenance. And I ask you to stick around, Kent, and report at a Board of Supervisors meeting because our Board of Supervisors meetings are a little more watched and a little more attended than our drainage district meetings, and I think it was important that everybody have the same information. So let's don't go through the whole presentation you did earlier, but give us the high points.
Yeah, I'm Kent Rohde with Bolton and Mank, and with me today is Quentin Snyder out of Bolton and Mank's Ames office. So we provide district watchman services for those times when the county staff gets overwhelmed, particularly in the spring when tile blowouts and tile repairs are more evident because farmers are in the field. So we're here to provide on an hourly basis a service to investigate the issue as it's reported to the board or the county engineer's office, and then report back on what the issue is and investigate, determine an estimate of cost, meet with contractors on site to determine what their thoughts are on repairs and their determine a cost or a quote from them. After they are approved to move forward with the work, then we would inspect the work that they perform to make sure it's repaired properly, and then report back on what the repair was done and the cost that was incurred to the district. This would only be as needed and on a time and material basis at a rate as shown in our proposal.
Mm-hmm. And so appreciative of the presentation, appreciative of the flexibility to get to where we are, so that everybody is aware of what the action that the Drainage District Trustees took was to send the initial proposal on to our civil attorney, work with our county engineer to come back with a final proposal for the Drainage District Trustees to consider. Anything to add, Morris or Marty? And then we'll get to Arden, who wants to speak to this topic.
I would just ask, because we operate without this capacity today because we had it internally, and through retirement we gave this away in a large sense. I would ask Darren if he would tell us what happens when we don't have this ability now. I mean, timeliness is everything, but I mean, what I would like you to speak both the fact that, okay, we operate in the sense that we don't have a backup plan to ourselves, and what we would expect by doing that going forward to the people who work here.
Like I say, for the most part, this is a backup plan. We're still going to have a tile crew. We have a lot of tile on our roadsides that we still repair ourselves. And when, you know, workload allows, we're going to get out there and do the easy stuff out in the farm fields for the district tile. But to me, this is just one additional resource that will help us get to things even quicker than we did before. And we've also had a number of those. The limit's been pushed up to 50,000 where you can do a repair and not hold a hearing, because we're required to do the repairs regardless. They got to be done. And we've had a number of those pop up where we need contractors to go out and do the work, and it's a lot of staff time to go out and meet with them and get the quotes and inspect the job, and that's where I think we get a lot of benefit from this service.
Absolutely. And so the reality to underscore is all credit to Dave Toot. Dave Toot gave us the capacity to deal with more than probably we should have. I mean, the reality is we were laying more on the engineer's office than probably was reasonable to do, but it was primarily based on having Dave Toot and knowing that so much of that could fall to him.
And I told you how many work orders we had. That doesn't count the number of calls Dave got directly in his
first. And we go ham.
And got down anyway, so I can't count those.
No matter what we do as drainage district trustees, your intent is still to do as much as you possibly can.
Yeah.
So this is not looking for you redirecting staff to do other projects. You still will try to do virtually anything and everything that you can.
Correct.
And can I just restate that? Because I agree with it, but I want a caveat on there. As much as you possibly can, that doesn't interfere with us getting the necessary road work and bridge work
Absolutely.
Done that we've got to get done. And sometimes now we were having drainage district issues, especially in the spring, that would cause us to put off some other work that we need to do. And what I'm suggesting is we need to have another tool in the toolbox. There's direct costs and indirect costs, right? And we got to have another tool in the toolbox to handle the drainage district issues that we need without putting us behind the eight ball on some of the road and bridge work issues that we have.
Okay, and just to recap kind of how my concerns in the meeting, the number one concern is Bolton Mink is also our engineering firm for larger drainage projects. And so I would like to see us getting bids from two other firms that provide this washroom service that are known to us, so that we can certainly alleviate any concern that we gave it to them without reaching out and finding out who else could be a vendor. I also have a question that we referred over to legal about exactly what would be the caps here. I mean, who pays for it? Are we purchasing a service, or is this through completely the drainage district? So those are the two that I've referred over, but it will come back to us for more discussion on this.
Super. Anything else before we get to Arden?
I would want to add just one thing that this is covered under Chapter 468 of the Code of Iowa. There is a section in there, and I can't, don't have the section.
Yeah, I mean, we're all solidly with loading, but that we'll get that answer, and that'll be fine. Anything else? Arthur, come on up. So our friend Arden, who pays really close attention to all things county, especially financial county, gave me a call yesterday afternoon, and he and I had a nice conversation about his concerns of additional costs without additional benefit to landowners. Go ahead, Arden.
Yeah, yes.
Sorry, I'll introduce yourself.
I'm Arden Greiner. I'm from Sherman Township. You know, the way that it read in the minutes was that everything was going to be turned over to the engineering office. I mean, it would be turned over to this engineer and this contract into the Watchman program. I've got a friend in Hardin County where they started doing this, and the cost has went up like 10 times. I mean, you bring in the engineering firm, I don't know how you can assess a tile blowout without getting in the ground and digging it up. I mean, if an engineer goes out, it's a best guess. Then he's going to hire a subcontractor. It's going to take time. It's another best guess. There's going to be variances because, I mean, you just got to get in and do the work. I'm disappointed that the county engineer isn't trying to find a staff person to do what Dave did.
Well, we're going to continue with the tile crew. He absolutely is going to find somebody. But be clear, Arden, we're not going to find somebody to do what Dave 2 did. So my first boss out of college said the way to be successful in life is to bite off more than you can chew and then chew it. And Dave 2 was the epitome of that. And we're not going to replace Dave 2. We're going to get somebody who takes Dave 2's job. But
that's a defeatist attitude.
It's a realistic
Dave 2 was special. Yeah, but you can build a person into that position.
Maybe so, but even optimistically, Arden, you're talking about a time frame gap, and I promise you this, if you've got a tile problem in your field, you want us to get in there and fix it right and fix it now.
Exactly, and the efficiencies of hiring an engineering firm than hiring a subcontractor would be so inefficient, expensive, and slow that I wish we could stay with the old style system.
Super. Thank you.
I think you agree partially with the smaller stuff should definitely be handled in that.
100%.
And I was a little disappointed.
Darren was what you heard today, Arden. That's why I asked the question. I wanted for you all ears here to hear that answer and that's going to ask and answer.
It sounded like road ditches was going to get a priority over the farm fields, which I don't
blame. I didn't hear that at all. Darren, would you clarify that? Did you imply that at all?
No. We'll be able to get to the road stuff quicker if we have one more resource to
Well, we said in the district meeting, the drainage district meeting, was the fact that we have wheeled, you know, excavators, not trackhoes, and not a trackhoe. So the conditions in the field will tell you if you can or can't get in it.
Right.
So, I mean, if you want us to buy a trackhoe, I'm sure Darren could probably, you know, he's smiling when I say that. You know, go ahead. If you want us to buy a trackhoe so we can do that in the timeliness, you know, that's no small thing there.
I'm just concerned if you turn it over to an engineer and they go out there without a spade, they're not going to be able to make a proper assessment.
Absolutely. And let me say this as Arden, and Arden, you can stand there while I say this since I'm saying it about you. Arden is ultra consistent in what he's concerned about and how he's concerned and is one of our citizens who's willing to come tell us about it when he's concerned. And I appreciate that. Thank you. Anything else for us today in terms of Bolton Mink? Kent, we sure appreciate you coming in today.
Thanks, Arden. I always like to hear what you say.
Good. All right. Next item is agency reports, and we get to hear from Jerome Rewers from Juvenile Court Services first. Jerome, how are you doing today?
Hi. I'm doing great. This is exciting. I used to be on the tile crew for the county for 4 summers.
Outstanding.
Yeah. Hopefully they're not.
You like it at JCS, or you want to come back to the county and dig?
Well, hopefully they're not fixing our creative fixes that we had to do sometimes.
Don't tell Shirley that I tried to lure you away.
We could work on the weekend.
Thanks, Roger. Jerome, how's everything at JCS?
Everything is going well. As I paragraphed in my report, I really want to express the partnership and the appreciation that we have with our relationship with the three of you. With the county attorney's office, we have a very strong relationship and working relationship with them. And then also the facilities that you provide us. We couldn't ask for anything better. It gives us the opportunity to have a nice place to meet our families. It provides a space for us to work on our professional development, hold trainings, hold conferences and staffings and so forth. So that's what I wanted to clarify.
And I just want to underscore, thank you so much for saying that. It's important that everybody recognize that it is not a given that the Board of Supervisors and the County Attorney's Office and JCS are all going to pull in the same direction and work together as well as these three entities seem to work together. It doesn't happen that way in a lot of counties. And I would reflect it back on JCS. You guys are so easy to work with and always so helpful as we look at doing things in Story County. So greatly appreciate you guys as well.
Thank you. Number-wise, I just want to kind of highlight our shelter and detention placements and lengths of stay on page 2. We're pretty close to the numbers in detention. Last year we had 19 kids in for the fiscal year on a 403 days and a 21-day average. Right now we're a little bit higher. We've got a month to go, and we've had 22 kids in detention for 415 days, but our averages went down almost 2 or 3 days there at 18.9. With shelter, we're down from a year ago. We haven't put as many kids in shelter. We've had less days, by over 150 less days, and our average is down 7 days on the average as well. We're trying to move kids through the shelters and through the detention as fast as we can. There have been new contracts that DHS put in place the beginning of this fiscal year. We're starting to see the effects of that now. We're placing our kids near their home in our service area. We have placements at Woodward, placements in Johnston. Our shelters are in Des Moines and also, of course, in Ames. We're not farming our kids out, so to speak, to Mason City like we used to Clarinda, Forest, Esterville area. And we're keeping them closer. They're working on a better relationship with their families since they're closer. However, the problem is we're selecting who we place. We're putting the higher-risk kids, and the number of beds that DHS contracted with had shrunk. So we're now at like a backlog where these facilities are full and our kids are waiting to start their treatment and their programming. The new contract is just kind of catching up with itself right now, and we'll see how we process through the next few months.
Okay.
It would sound like those kids would be more at risk. Are you finding that some of them are getting into more trouble or making bad decisions during that delay period?
Not necessarily. Okay. But I think we're doing a good job of we're putting the right kids in the right treatment facilities and getting them the programming that they need.
And I would imagine, and help me if I'm missing on this, but when somebody warrants going into a program but we don't have a spot for them, it really means that you and your staff have to have more hands-on time with them in the meantime while we're waiting for a spot to open up.
Exactly. Or they're waiting in a shelter or detention facility. We try to keep them in the community. We try to keep a hands-on approach. Use more of our time for them. It's valuable. And we can keep them in the community because we're hands-on.
Perfect.
I don't have much else to report.
Question for Jerome.
I serve with Jerome on the DCAP board. And when you do the interface of Central Iowa Juvenile Justice and DCAT and Jerome's capacity, you have the opportunity to pull him aside and tell anecdotal what's going on. When you see the numbers generated by other counties, frankly, we are not that big as a driver and a user, which is good on us because some counties just have an oversized presence in that sense. The fact that they're taking the pains and the efforts to keep these young people closer to their support networks is another plus, because the thing is, you think that you might have a better opportunity of a successful outcome knowing that they're the people that they count on when they leave your area have the ability to reinforce what you try to impart on them. Jerome sit there, when we see somebody privately or in that capacity, we'll sit there and tell me where we're at and what he's dealing with. And frankly, we have wins in the system, even with these kids that sometimes color outside the lines. Thank you, Jerome.
Yeah. I have just a question also on page 2, with you looking at the YSS services and your sheltered workshop expenditures seem to be a bit ahead of budget. Do you have any concerns about your last quarter being able to fund all the kids, all these services out of the sheltered workshop?
No, there's no concerns. I sat down with the executives of YSS and reviewed this last week, and that wasn't brought to our light.
Okay, great. Okay. Yeah, thanks again for hanging in there. I know that some days it's you've got a lot on the plate and a lot of challenges. Okay.
Sure. We're lucky to have you, Jerome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we get to hear from Salvation Army.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hi, Carrie. Well, thank you for having me.
So glad you're here.
Last week, Tuesday, was our 6th year of being open in Story County.
Yeah.
Time has flown, hasn't it? I wanted to talk a little bit about the services offered and then focus in on those two areas that the county funds. We are, since July 1st, we have served 141 families with homelessness prevention. Rent, mortgage, utilities, and that kind of thing that we're seeing that's definitely needed in the county. That saved 362 people from being homeless, at least for that particular month. We had 10 families from Iowa State, and 105 of those families that we saw were brand new to us. We've never seen them before. We partner with the county also on providing the pasture funds with the Crestview Mobile Home Park issues that were going on, and so we contracted, and we really only served one person, which I hope that was a good thing, that people were able to find their way on their own. We have a representative payee program where we actually manage the Social Security funds for folks. We're currently serving 52 clients. One of those resides outside of Story County, but they started in county, and we kept them when they left, just for consistency. We have 19 people on our waiting list. There's really not a lot of resources to refer to that are in county, but we do have a list of people and different agencies that we make referrals to. I want to talk a little bit about food insecurity in Story County, because we're the highest food insecure county in the state of Iowa, and that's where we've put a lot of our focus this past year, is in our food pantry and our what we're calling the Doing the Most Good Market. So people can go through our pantry once every 30 days. They can pick out items and staples that they need in their home, and it's a choice pantry, so they pick them out, so we know they're going to eat them. They can get eggs and meat, and then we have a Doing the Most Good Market, which people are allowed or able to visit twice a week. We do have a requirement, though, that they visit our pantry once a month. That pantry, the foods that are in there come from Walmart on North Grand. They give us food 5 days a week and Fresh Time, and then also Come and Go. Come and Go reported to us that they were getting rid of about 5,000 units of food a month out on the two stores out in West Ames. So we started working with them and then added another one a month and a half ago. So those kinds of things are getting out the door quickly. Also in that market, people can get bread, milk, juice, different produce when available. In the summertime, we offer Plantereau produce and mustard seed farms. They donate. We also help people with diapers and wipes and baby food, and so there's a lot of need for that. Our numbers, it's hard to see it happen because the numbers are high, and we aren't the highest in the county of serving people, but we've seen 1,425 separate visits. Those are duplicated, by the way. And we've served 3,831 people already, and that fiscal year is not over yet. The market has seen 2,331 separate visits, and those are duplicated. So we know that people are in need. We know that 188 of those families are brand new to us, and some of them have come from Iowa State, 41 families. About 60% of the food or the people who visit us come from Ames, so that tells you that people are also coming from the other small towns. One of the things we've tried to do, though, is a bit of a reverse mobile food pantry, in that Zering, Cambridge, Colo, they come to us and pick up food and take it back and hand that out at their pantries. That our hope is that people will have to drive to Ames less or drive wherever they have to go to get their food. We also give some of our food to Calvary United Methodist Church. They do a food pantry as well. We share with Boys and Girls Club and ERP. So we're trying. And then we have a farmer who will take the rest and feed it to their animals if there's anything left. So we're trying really hard in those areas. Emergency disaster services is one of the two areas that you fund. I'm so happy to report we haven't had anything.
Right.
And so I guess I hate to even say it out loud, so my apologies. But we work closely with the Disaster Coalition. We meet quarterly to sort of be planful about what in the event, what's going to happen. And our role within the coalition, among other things, is the food and hydration support of first responders and anybody who needs anything after that. We have access to canteens that can come within about an hour's notice, so we could do some mass feeding that way. And then our bill payer program, we fluctuated between 4 and 6 people we're serving. Right now we're holding steady at 5. We spent 144 direct hours working with people and 102 non-direct. So those non-directs are making calls on behalf of them, contacting me, doing paperwork, things like that. We can't do that program without volunteers. Those are the people who go into the homes and make sure that bills are paid, things are filed, so those phone calls are made. So we feel like we've helped to keep people in their least restrictive environment by having a well-vetted volunteer go in and visit with them. So, and then I would say that we make referrals, really all over the place. We see a lot of people for a lot of different reasons, and we try to match them up to make sure that they're getting the most out of the services that they have available to them. And then I'll throw out one other thing. I've had a phone conversation with Deb Childroth about the fact that I still have a little bit of money left in the EDS fund, but our bill payer fund ran out in March because of the increase in time being spent. So we're discussing the best way to go about seeing if we can just move those funds around. They'll be used. So.
You're talking to the right person.
I know. So I think that's it.
Well, Story County was so fortunate 6 years ago when you and Salvation Army opened up shop here in Story County. And it hurts to hear about the issues that we have, but it would hurt even more if Salvation Army, among others, wasn't there to help fill the gaps that that we know we have. So thank you so much.
Thank you. We're happy.
Questions?
Good morning, Karen. Anybody sitting here in the audience or watching this video, just heard you say that Story County is the most insecure food county in the state, correct?
Yeah.
Can you tell us why that is to the best of your ability?
To be honest, I don't have a clue. It doesn't, I mean, there's a lot of theories, but I don't know what the reason is. We have a lot of people that kind of influx here because of the jobs, but then they're working two jobs in order to maintain a home, so they need food because they can't afford the food. People are moving outside of Ames because it's incredibly expensive to live there. So there's a lot of things that factor into it, free and reduced lunches, pantry uses. The Food Bank of Iowa keeps a lot of really good statistics on that. But I don't, I don't know what the rhyme or reason is for it, to be honest.
The 100th collaboration that Carrie and I both attend, one of the things that we've done is looked at the data that United Way is gathering and managing, and there we have a downward shift, a bump, if you will, but in how many the meals during the summer go down, and that's because of the loss of the free and reduced lunch program. And one of the goals we may be looking at is just trying to raise that bump up in the summer so that at least we're even about where the food insecurity is, because right now it gets even worse in the summertime. And depending on one of the other volunteers did some calculations, and minimum we're $11,000 short of what we would need, and that would be if we bought everything, all of the pantries bought everything from the Food Bank of Iowa, but they don't stock everything in equal quantity. So at 14 cents a pound, it isn't always what people want or whatever, but yeah.
I think the high cost of living in Story County tends to push some of this. That's just my own personal opinion.
Other questions or comments?
Thanks for your work.
Yeah,
thank you.
Keep it up, Carrie. Thanks. Next is the Emergency Residence Project annual report. Carrie.
Good morning.
Good morning, Carrie.
It's the Carrie Show. The Carrie Show. Hey, you can. This morning, the first thing I wanted to say is thank you to the Board of Supervisors for your continued support for the Emergency Residence Project, especially for increasing the financial support through ASSET for our transitional housing program last year, which greatly benefited the impact that we're going to be able to have this next year. With that increase in financial support that we received through ASSET, we're able to hire a full-time staff member to provide one-on-one housing support services to both the transitional housing families as well as our new rapid rehousing program, which I'll touch on in a minute. So we're able to be a lot more proactive with our families and working on getting them stabilized faster and into permanent housing on a quicker basis, which then means that we have more openings to meet more people's needs, which is fantastic. So thank you very much for that support. We greatly appreciate it. As I mentioned, we do have a new rapid rehousing program that just started in January. The idea behind the rapid rehousing program is that we're taking households directly from shelter or living in unsheltered situations and putting them into housing in the rental market without having to utilize our services on site, and then providing rental assistance to them as well as housing support services for 1 to 6 months to help them stabilize. And then when we're done, they're able to maintain housing on their own, have a connection already made with the landlord, already have those resources in place, and that way hopefully they're able to maintain housing, therefore ending their experience with homelessness and getting them out of our shelter quickly and into housing. So we're very excited about that. We actually housed our first family in Story County last week, so we're very excited. It took about 2 weeks from shelter to housed, which is fantastic. So we're very excited to be able to offer that within Story County. We're also working on increasing our shelter diversion program. The idea behind shelter diversion is to, since we are a very small shelter with minimal openings, the idea being that when people are accessing our shelter, we're the very last resource that they have available to them. And the longer we can keep people out of shelter, the better, because we know that the longer people are in shelter, the harder it is to get out. So if we can keep them out of shelter longer, especially households with kiddos, it's less traumatic for the families, and that way our few openings that we do have can go towards the people that don't have any other options, that are living in their cars, on the streets, and things like that. We're fortunate that we got a grant through United Way of Story County to help us provide some funding behind that so that we can provide some financial resources to folks to help keep them out of shelter as much as possible. And we had an example of that that worked perfectly a couple weeks ago. Ames Police gave us a call. There was a homeless veteran
that was panhandling, trying to get gas money so that he could get on to his next location. And through this grant, we were able to provide him with the gas money to fill up his truck and get him moving on his way so that he didn't have to panhandle, nor did he have to come into shelter to gain access to those resources. So we're very excited to have that option available to folks. We're continuing to work towards developing a coordinated entry regional system throughout five counties, Story, Boone, Marshall, Hardin, and Greene. The idea behind it is kind of think of it as going to the ER. When you go to the ER, you get triaged to see what your level of need is. You are then connected to the appropriate resources to meet that need. That's basically what coordinated entry is. It's giving us the tools that we need to better triage people, get them connected with the most appropriate resources first, since we do have very limited housing resources, and making sure that those most vulnerable folks are getting access to those resources first instead of first come, first serve. We have partnered with YSS and Access within Story, Boone, Marshall, and Hardin counties to make this happen, and Green, and we're hoping to be up and going by July. The other idea behind this is also we're working on developing a new street outreach program through volunteers so that we can gain access to folks that are living in unsheltered situations and hopefully get them access to those housing resources if they want them without forcing them to come into shelter to gain access to those resources. So that's something that we'll be working on developing over the summer.
What are the hurdles to developing that, Carrie?
Just time. Primarily, with us being as busy as we are and trying to get this new rapid rehousing program up and going and that kind of stuff, is just something that unfortunately keeps getting put to the back burner as other things come up. But we had our first meeting yesterday with a couple of volunteers. We put together some great ideas and some great partners that we want to bring to the table to help us. So we're hoping that roughly about July or August, we'll be able to get that up and going.
And what's the appropriate role of the counties, specifically Story County, in something like this?
That's something that we're still trying to figure out with the street outreach. A lot of it is going to be making sure that as people in the community see people that are living in unsheltered situations, of letting us know that so that we can go out and develop those relationships with folks so that we know where to find them rather than just wandering around aimlessly and hoping that we find someone. But having a much better idea of where folks are staying, where folks are residing, so that we can go out and meet with them and develop a relationship with them. And then when they're open to receiving those services, then we can provide those services without forcing them to come here. But we're still trying to identify what role the different partners are going to have as we move forward with this. Otherwise, the rest of the report just goes over the numbers that we serve, averaging about 26 people a night with the emergency shelter. 23 people a night in our transitional housing, and we've assisted over 1,300 individuals with our homelessness prevention. So we're staying pretty busy at the Emergency Residence Project.
I didn't get a copy of the report, so that's okay, so I can run one later. I just wondered if it had come in advance.
I apologize. It came on Friday. So
okay. Right.
Friday afternoon is when I got it and shut.
Good. Question for Carrie.
Thank you.
Oh, that was a pretty thorough presentation. Nothing that rose to my mind did you not speak to, so thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we so appreciated you coming in and taking over ERP and the such a long-standing, solid program for us here in Story County, but have appreciated the way you've taken it really to the next level and maybe modernize some of our operations and the benefits that's going to provide. I'm going to be really excited to hear about the rapid housing now that you got your first family in, what kind of results we see over the 6 months, and how sustainable their situation becomes after that.
We're really excited to offer this service and really excited to see how well it does. I know I talked with colleagues in other communities throughout Iowa that offer rapid rehousing, and they just go on and on about the success that they see. Their shelter has gone from having a wait list for their shelter to having openings on a fairly regular basis.
Yep.
Because they're much better equipped to get people out of shelter and into housing, which is what our goal is. staying on the Rapid Rehousing Program, mm-hmm. I know at one point the Homeless Coalition was talking about how difficult it was to get some landlords to agree to take in people who had spotty credit or had been homeless, et cetera. So do you have certain landlords that you're courting with the Rapid Rehousing Program to go ahead and take?
We will. So some of the other organizational changes that we've made, on top of having a new full-time housing support specialist to provide a direct service, we now have a housing and volunteer director that will oversee the two housing programs. And part of her role is to go out and make those connections with landlords throughout Story County and develop those relationships so that when families come up and they say, hey, I want to live in Story City, for example, we already have a handful of landlords that know about the program, know what we're trying to do, and that are willing to work with us to help streamline folks to get into housing. So that's something that we're working on right now.
Right. The other advantage that we have is landlords' response when there's less than 1% vacancy rate, as there was in Ames, is going to be different than when there's an 11% vacancy
rate. That's right.
So,
and hopefully with the fact that we're being able to guarantee rent for 6 months as well as some support services to help folks maintain their housing, at least in my previous job, we found that that is highly beneficial when we can go in with the household to say, this is what we can offer, this is what you're guaranteed in rent. That usually helps open the doors a little
bit. Well, conceptually, it's the epitome of helping somebody up and getting them on their way.
Very much.
I love it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is consideration of minutes from the 15th.
I would so move as presented.
Okay. Motion in a second. Olson?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. No personnel actions. Consent agenda board.
As presented.
Aye. Second.
Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passes. Public hearing. Consideration of resolution 18-103, resolution amending the FY18 budget. Lisa, we're seeing a lot of year later. Are we getting near the end of a fiscal year or something?
Thanks.
Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
Welcome back.
Thank you. So, what you have in front of you is the final budget amendment of the year. By code, we have to give 30 days option for people to appeal our budget. So, you have to have it done by May 31st, so they have 30 days to appeal it if so moved. The proposed amendment was published on 5/10 in all three county newspapers. It has to be same rules as a budget, 10 to 20 days ahead of time. Overall, the revenues are being lowered by 1.9%, $863,000 from the most recent amended budget back in November. The majority of those dollars are grant dollars that aren't happening this FY. Expenses are being increased by 3.5%. $1.6 million from the November amendment. Big ticket items, we've talked about this many times. Mental health regional payment, we're increasing that by $500,000. That's getting submitted for payment next week. So just so you know, it's going to be a big claim period again. The Tedesco Environmental Learning Center, we're increasing by $743,000, trying to align with the dollars that are there to be spent with the year that we're spending them, we hope. Remodeling of the Hazel Group Home, I'm putting in $250,000. I think we've had the discussion. We don't think we're going to spend all of that, but have it in there just in case. At this point, we're not going to spend it all. Some purchases pulled forward from the FY19 budget request and the remaining salaries that were originally budgeted at 95% of assumed actual. The unassigned general supplemental ending fund balance after this amendment will be almost 28%. Our policy is 25%, so we're looking good there. The rural fund will be 19.6, secondary roads 14.7. Overall, we have an ending fund balance of $16.2 million. Of that, $6.5 is restricted funds, $2.2 is committed, $2.4 is assigned, and $4.9 is unassigned. Okay? This is the final amendment for the year, obviously, as I said earlier. The documentation that was attached to this did show by department what we're doing. The highlighted ones were requested from departments. The rest were just needed.
Yeah, this gets us to the end. This is all about managing our ending fund balances, which we're going to do better than 28%. I mean, we're going to end up probably just under 30.
Marty and I were having this conversation the other day, and I said that, quite frankly, it's usually a 6% variance on that one. Mm-hmm. So we're 6% better than we anticipate. But, quite frankly, a lot of those dollars are going to have to be amended first thing into the next fiscal
correct.
Year because they're not getting spent this fiscal
well, and it
year.
Just feels
not,
like...
Not the general fund dollars as much as the other restricted... Right. committed all those funds that are getting...
Well, and every year we seem to get a little better, a little... We seem to shrink the accordion just a little bit where we don't have to amend... I mean, so many times. Our budget, you know, we have this budget that starts on July 1st, and by July 5th, we're already having to make changes to it, but it has everything to do with carryovers. What you've plugged in here is kind of best case scenario of the work we're going to be able to get done between now and the end of the fiscal year. But we got to have the money available in case it does get done. And then we're going to have to pull some of it forward. I mean, necessary way of doing business. Questions or comments?
You said some of the slippage on revenue was grant dollars. Where were those grant dollars?
Conservation.
Okay. That's a... year-to-year thing. I'm
so sure. their revenues and expenses are going down substantially for the current fiscal year because of grant dollars. They're not spending the dollars. They're not bringing them in or spending them.
All right. And timing, Mike, you want to address that timing as much as anything on a couple of those.
Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, I'm always... very thankful for Lisa and the auditor's office for working with us because our timelines float around so much on some of these projects, and I know it's got to be a headache. But the primary ones here that we're talking about has been the some that I was going to talk about later has been the grants that we received for land acquisition. That's the majority of what this is, give or take $500,000 for that. And so we expect that now we're going to spend that at the leading edge of next FY. Some grants that we have been awarded, and we were also waiting on another grant that's been lingering that we were pledged early on. And Rick can probably correct me here, but I want to say it was 4 years ago we were pledged to this money and had not received it. And so now we are in the final stages of receiving that money. And so that's what has been delaying the rest of the project. We can't spend all the grant money we've received until we get this last installment. And so that's one of the reasons that we keep pushing this back. And now we can see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Absolutely. And so all of this is case in point of why we pay such close attention to our initial budget, which is set 18 months ahead of time. Clearly, things are going to change over that 18 months, but many counties choose to use their budgeting work as an exercise, right? It's something that's required by state law that they fill out and the numbers balance, and they do it more like the exercise. Here in Story County, we choose to use it as our working document, and by being really, really tight with the budget and really sharpen our pencils everywhere we can, it gives us more flexibility to deal with these unbelievable swings that we're going to deal with on an annual basis. If it's not, I mean, in previous years, it wasn't conservation, it was roads, or it was, something else that was triggering these kind of things, and we need to maintain the flexibility to do that. So, other questions or comments before we open the public hearing?
None.
All right, in that case, I will open the public hearing and ask if there is anyone who would like to speak to Resolution 18-103.
Two.
102? 103. Yeah, Resolution 18.
No, sorry, I have two notes in here. And I
yep, Resolution 18. I'm my candidate to miss it. 18-103, anybody wish to address it? See, no one moving back home. We'll close the public hearing and turn to the board for action.
I would move consideration of Resolution 18-103, amending the FY18 budget as presented by Lisa from the Auditor's Office.
I would second that.
Motion to second. Further discussion? Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Resolution 18-103 gets us to the end.
Got it. You guys see me one more time real quick.
Got to be able to spend it. Yeah. Next public hearing item is consideration of Ordinance 271, and this is honest, I'm just reading it verbatim, an ordinance adopting the Code of Ordinances of Story County, Iowa. Ethan, we really adopted an ordinance to adopt ordinances?
That's correct. You know, it's a very exciting time in Story County. We've got a six-month project coming to a conclusion. This is the recodification, as required by Iowa Code 331-302. Every 5 years, the county has to go through this procedure. And I am personally very grateful to the board for approving the assistance of Iowa Codification, because this is a big project. Iowa Codification helped us with that, doing an initial legal review, and they're in the business of doing that. And then I should also thank and acknowledge the help of Alyssa and Leanne and all the county departments for their inside baseball knowledge in getting these different little, for example, Jerry and I would comment as we were doing an enforcement issue or doing some other issue, this is kind of outdated, this should be changed. So we were able to address a lot of those different concerns. So now here we are for the board to consider it, and it has to be for three readings, but you can waive the third reading, so this is just the first consideration.
Super. Questions for Ethan before we open the public hearing?
None.
All right, we'll open the public hearing and see if there's anyone who would like to address us on the consideration of Ordinance 271, an ordinance adopting ordinances. You sure? Nobody wants to take a swipe at that one? All right. We'll close the public hearing. We've got to do at least two readings of this, so if somebody is willing to make a motion, it's first reading of 271 and set second consideration.
What would that date be?
I move that we adopt Ordinance Number 271, which is an ordinance adopting the Code of Ordinances of Story County, Iowa, for its first reading, and schedule the second reading for Tuesday, September 29th, 2018. Oh, geez, sorry.
Huh? Happy birthday, Marty. That's my birthday.
She meant
baseball. Oh, really good. Okay. I'm so sorry.
Happy birthday to me.
All right.
Motion to the second to consider first reading of Ordinance 271 and set second reading for next week, May 29th. Further discussion?
None.
Olson?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Ethan, great work. Thank you.
That's
funny. So my birthday is the 11th, September 11th. So that must have been what I was not thinking about.
All right, two additional items. Now Lisa Markley wants to actually spend the money that we just talked about. So this is Resolution 18-104.
Okay, let's do a little
amending appropriations.
Let's do a little conversation about how Rick and I have had this conversation about 100 times about how he doesn't really care if it's more work on Lisa's part. But did you notice how many times we've done an appropriation amendment here?
I did.
Okay. Just saying.
thank you for all your hard work, Lisa.
Yeah,
that's what we were after, right?
I wasn't looking for that. I just wanted to point out that it doesn't matter how much work it is. Okay, so what we're doing is now, obviously, you just amended the budget. We're going to appropriate those dollars so that they can spend them. I can do a department by department, or I can let you guys read. But this is 100% appropriation for everybody at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what I'll say about all the extra work you put in, which we really appreciate, is only county in Iowa to balance the budget in each of the last 6 years, and $16+ million ending fund balance, which you haven't seen in your career here, and this is all part of managing those dollars to the benefit of people of Story County. And the people of Story County so appreciate all the extra effort you put in. Four, questions, comments, or a motion?
I would move consideration of Resolution 18-104 as presented for the FY18 final appropriation by Mr. Markle.
I would second that.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Chi?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Thanks, Lisa. Thank you.
Have a good day, guys.
Next item is consideration of revised training schedule for COOP-COG, Continuity of Operations, Continuity of Government. We talked about this. Did we talk about this 2 weeks ago?
At least.
2 weeks ago, now we're ready to make it formal.
And that's what today's action is, setting the 3 dates for training, knowing June 20th is our team story event. So we'll start that one 8:30 to 10:30 and actually try to hold it here, or location to be determined, but I didn't receive any feedback.
Yep. Questions, comments, or a motion, board?
I have no comments or questions. Will I set the motion?
Sure. All right. Motion that we'll have the 3 training dates set, June 20th, August 29th, and November 30th, all of 2018. Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Thanks, Leanne.
Thanks for moving that along.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Good morning. Next is consideration of contracts with Construct for construction of water trail accesses at Peterson and Askew. Mike?
Hello. Thank you. This is a project that we've been working on, again, one of those ones that we've been working on for a number of years, working toward a final destination of designation, I should say, of Skunk River as an official water trail in the state that has been designated. We have a water trail plan. We've worked with stakeholders, jurisdictions along the river to develop that plan, and now we're implementing it. Eric is going to talk about that a little bit later. But so we received a couple grants, or one grant, I should say, from the DNR, Water Trails Program, to improve some of our access points to improve the overall water trail. So we reached out for quotes on improving those. We got quotes back. They were a little bit above our estimated budget. Estimated budget was done by DNR contractors probably 3 years ago. And so it's not surprising that our quotes are a little bit higher than what was estimated. The Conservation Board is asking for, it supports this and is asking for your approval. One of the reasons that we're asking for your specific approval is on the use of energy transfer fund dollars for the county match. And energy transfer fund, of course, as you know, is located in the general fund. And as you see in the documentation, if we award these contracts, we would need a little over $35,000 of the energy transfer fund to complete those. The grant amount is $22,000, and the projects are the access at Peterson Park, which is, if you will, on 180th Street, just north of the park. And the other one is on Askew Bridge, which is, I can't tell you the road number, is on the bridge at the Skunk River Crossing, the blacktop north of Cambridge. So both of those are in dire need of improvement, and we'd appreciate your consideration of use of those funds and award these contracts.
Questions or comments for Mike?
No, I'm glad to see that. When we assigned, what was it, 2 years ago, Dakota Access Dollars, and it's been, you've been pretty scrupulous on what you've done, and so I think it's pretty how you've chosen to apply, this is a facility that gets used. I live out by this, and it's just like, this will be well received.
Absolutely.
No comments.
I take a motion.
I would move consideration with regards to construct contract for consideration of the water trail access at Peterson Bridge and Askew for $58,890.
I would second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Chief. Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. Next is discussion and consideration of resolution 18-109, Railview Residential Parcel Subdivision.
Yes.
Amelia, you get started. I'm getting a cough drop.
Okay.
But go ahead.
So this is the subdivision on 585th. It's actually 32364 585th. It's just south of Cambridge.
Can you move it a little bit to the
mouse?
Just by turning it on.
Okay.
That would work.
That's weird. Okay. The applicant is Brian Humphrey. He is here today. The owners are Aaron and Mark Thompson. This is our residential parcel subdivision. So they are dividing a parcel into two lots. There is an existing single-family dwelling on one of the lots, and the lot to the south is buildable for a single-family dwelling, although there are no immediate plans to do so. I'm going to pull up the PowerPoint here, and you'll see this is the general location. So again, we're just south of Cambridge, about a quarter mile, and near Huxley as well. This is the proposed division. So both lots are proposed to be over 3 acres in size and have frontage on 5885th, although the county engineer noted that there may be a shared access needed in the future when Lot 2 is developed because of site distance issues on 585th. So that note has been added to the plat. This is an image of the plat. The property designated as rural residential on our C2C plan, so that designation supports development of homes on larger lots, such as the case with this proposal. I also wanted to point out this is the Railview subdivision, and so the railroad is just here to the east there. We also have a subdivision to the south and several residential properties to the south as well. And again, this is really near to Cambridge, within a quarter mile. Staff did a site review and noted that there appeared to be a home business on the property, but the applicant has indicated that this is the use of being phased out. Additionally, the existing house was constructed in 2009 and replaced the farmstead and the farm dwelling that was there. Here's an image of the zoning map. So you can see there's actually adjacent agricultural or residential zoning to the south. One of the adjacent dwellings to the south is zoned AR. The Valley U subdivision with four lots is also zoned AR, agricultural, residential. So there will only be two dwellings located in the quarter with the approval of this subdivision. In addition to those adjacent and nearby dwellings you can see on this map, there are 35 parcels within a half mile, 14 have dwellings, and 10 meet minimum lot size requirements and could be buildable for a dwelling. This is looking north on 585th. You can see the co-op inside of Cambridge just here to the north. This is looking east at the existing dwelling on proposed lot 1. Looking southeast at the accessory structures on proposed lot 1. This is looking south at 585th and part of proposed lot 2. This is lot 2. We didn't ask the applicant if the lot 2 was an agricultural production. I believe this is just grass or hay, but not row crops. So we're not taking any agricultural land out of production with the subdivision. This is looking southeast onto proposed lot 2. Here are the applicable regulations. I know we go through these a lot. So I will just go to comments and to analysis. Again, the Story County engineer had the comment about if a shared access being required when development would occur on proposed lot 2, which again may not occur for 2-3 years, according to the applicant. Environmental health did note that their septic system was all on proposed lot 1, so there was no easement required. We mailed notices to property owners within a quarter mile on May 14th and received no comments. We did wrap this to both the City of Cambridge and Huxley. They are both within 2 miles, and they have both provided us with their resolutions waiving their review in the case of Cambridge and in the case of Huxley approving the subdivision. So again, all requirements for a residential parcel subdivision and the land development regulations are met. Both lots have frontage. There may be a shared access easement necessary, and that's been communicated and added to the plat. There will only be two dwellings located on the quarter with the addition of proposed lot 2 and the construction of a dwelling on that lot. This is designated as a rural residential area by the CTC plan, and the proposal is consistent with this designation. No agricultural land will be taken out of production, and there are numerous dwellings near to this parcel. There's the city of Cambridge just to the north, but a subdivision to the south as well. And so planning and development staff recommend alternative one, which is approving resolution 18-109, the residential partial subdivision plat for the Railview subdivision as put forth in subdivision 04-18.
Outstanding. Good job. Questions?
Very painfully straightforward.
The applicant again is here.
Yeah, and I would offer an opportunity for the applicant to come up and address us if you'd like.
No, sir.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
If there's no question or comment, I take a motion.
We move consideration of resolution 18-109, Railview residential parcel subdivision, as presented by Amelia.
I'll second that.
Motion and a second. Further discussion?
None.
Anything to add, Amelia?
Nope.
All right. Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. 18-109 passes. Thank Congratulations.
You. Yep.
Very good. Thank you, Amelia.
Thanks.
I'm down to my last call drop, so we're in danger mode here. Next is discussion and consideration of approving JEO Consulting Group as the consultant for the strategic planning process for $14,645. Leanne Hart.
Morning again.
Hi,
Hi, Leanne.
Hello. I don't think I said good morning last time I ran up and left. Well, you explained what the item is. A couple months ago, I was before the board and sought direction on how to proceed with the next iteration of our strategic plan. And at that point, the direction was to put together an RFP, and we did that. And we received four proposals. They were all outlined in the memo that I did provide for the board, but they ranged everywhere from Texas to Ohio, Utah, and then Nebraska. JEO actually is the one we're recommending, and they do have a firm, an office in Ankeny. So they are headquartered out of Nebraska, but an Iowa company as well. The prices did range from proposals from $6,400 to $6,500 all the way up to right around $30,000. The four individuals and myself, Stacey Harris, Deb Schildroth, Alyssa Lignall, again, myself, reviewed the proposals. We went through a ranking evaluation matrix. Based on that, we came forth and did request to interview management partners in JEO Consulting, brought both in, and I say brought, we did Skype for management partners since they are out of Cincinnati, Ohio. Both firms did. I mean, really, really good proposals, really solid presentations. But just based on our discussions, the committee does recommend JEO Consulting Group for this project. It would kick off relatively soon. The action today would be to direct staff to work with the county attorney's office to get the contract. I'd hope for next Tuesday, but I'd actually forgotten about the Memorial Day weekend and the shortened agenda deadline for tomorrow, so it might actually be the following Tuesday. Losing that one day. So, do you have any questions?
I just have a comment when I went through their proposal, and it had to do with what seemed like a very short timeline considering of the summer. But that was, I mean, that's not an objection or anything. It's just something I noted, thinking we know how some people in Ames wander off for part of that. So it was a timeline.
And that was in response to the RP. We had a very aggressive time frame, given that this doesn't expire, but it is through the end of this fiscal year.
Right.
So I thought it would be beneficial if we could get this done and in place, not too far into the next fiscal year. Help guide us as discussions for budget start relatively soon, even though we just wrap them up. 5 months will be here before we know it.
Would there be some possibility of moving it back a little bit, say one more month for the deadline, for everything, or do you think that would push you and other staff too much as we head into the fall?
Yeah, it's definitely everything's up for discussion with them. I think either way it will be successful. I don't have a concern. If we add another month buffer in,
I'm sure they'll agree to it.
Now, here's my question, which we may pull that back. Okay. Did you find robust participation among various stakeholder groups, especially in the Ames area, last time you did your strategic plan?
No.
Okay. All right. In that case, then, I'd ask my questions. So I don't know that moving it 1 month out is going to do any good related to my concern about people being gone in the summer.
Absolutely. But, but it's a good point you make, Loris. And we always reserve the right to work with a consultant. So what we're most interested in is having the best strategic plan that we can, the best product possible at the end of this, and setting the deadline. If we find we're bumping up against the deadline, we can always, by mutual agreement, extend it out to get something else. I would just soon see us. So, I mean, what's important for us to remember is, as hard as it is to believe this, Story County did not have a strategic plan when this one was created.
Right.
That was the first one, right? Or is that second? So we didn't have one in 2010, created one. Now we're going to be through our third iteration. It's important to me that we not have a whole lot of gaps, because that's how you start to lose the momentum that we very clearly have gained. I'm expecting greater participation in this, because think of what's happened since this one was produced. We got the cornerstone, the capstone plan out. We've got some additional features that I think are going to drive more participation from more stakeholders. But I like the idea of an aggressive timeline, because that's how you actually get to the finish line, even if you don't get there right when you think you're going to get there.
I'll make the motion that we direct staff to go work with the county attorney's office to begin the contract discussions with JEO Consulting Group, Inc., with the hopes of bringing back the contract for consideration by the June, meeting in June.
Push it back a week, too.
I would second that. Got a motion and a second. Further discussion? I just say, good job putting this together, and the way you went about it. That's kind of a diverse pool of applicants that we got. So,
yeah.
Very cool. Anything else? Olson.
Aye.
Chitty. Sanders. Aye. Passes, and we'll look for it on June 5th. Next is discussion and consideration of revised flex benefit policy. And it says for 7-day review, but let's talk about that as well. Olson.
Good morning, Marissa.
Good morning. I brought this to you for your consideration. Our current flexible benefit policy under the contribution amount, we have the verbiage in there, the amount of the contribution will not exceed the maximum premiums for family dental and family vision for any given plan year. A few weeks ago, we did reduce the amount for the family dental, which actually brought the premiums, if you put both of them together, slightly $9 less than the flexible benefit amount. The flexible benefit amount has been set. It was set in the budget process. It was also set in two of our union contracts. So I'm just asking to remove that language and instead just state the monthly contribution amount will be determined annually by the Board of Supervisors, taking into consideration the actual cost for dental and vision premiums. The whole point was to cover the family dental and vision when this was changed a few years ago. So I didn't want to be in violation of our own policy as of July 1st. So.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons that I see, so absolutely I see doing this. I mean, the reality is this is where we are. And I understand why we wrote the initial policy the way we wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the intent for the flex benefit. And so the two of you didn't get to sit through those conversations of trying to figure out how we were going to establish a flex benefit and some of the chagrin that caused among some of our employees. This is the right way to go. It still gives the board flexibility, which is appropriate for the board. And I would say, I don't know that there's any reason to send this out for 7-day review, because this is what it is. We're not going to go back and change our flex benefit. So we're either going to be in violation of our policy or we're going to amend our policy. That's the only two choices.
Yeah, so it's up to the board has waived a 7-day review in the past if the policy really doesn't. If there's going to be no change, there is no major change to this. I wanted to request that verbiage to come out.
Yep. Questions, comments, or a motion?
I would agree with the fact that all we're doing is some housekeeping, reflecting on what we've done. We don't need to review it. We're just making thank you, Melissa, for going and chasing this down. Quite frankly, what we're doing is we're closing a sentence here. So I would move a consideration of the revised flex benefit policy as presented.
I would second.
You waive the 7-day review?
Yeah, I waive the 7-day review.
You want to second that? All right. Motion is second to approve the policy, waive 7-day review, which would make it policy as of today.
July 1st.
As of July 1st. Any other comments?
None.
Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Thanks, Alyssa.
Thank you, Alyssa.
Next, departmental reports, conservation.
Welcome back, Mike. Good morning, Erica.
Good morning.
I think whatever you had finally caught up to me, man.
Is that right?
Oh,
no. That's not good. Uh-oh. It's in my rear view mirror.
Yeah, but you were
nice
gone
exchange
for a few days. Yeah, right.
So, with me, as you know, is Erica Place. Erica is our outreach coordinator. And does just an outstanding job. She's going to talk a little bit about our social media usage and kind of the science that goes behind that. What I'm going to do is first I'm going to get some kind of some housekeeping done here on some quick updates before we get into the exciting work that Erica's going to chat with us about. Some quick updates. One, Hickory Grove Park. So we're completing construction on phase one. You know that's being managed by the Department of Natural Resources. We've installed several gully check dams, if you will, to prevent siltation. That's done. We've done more shoreline armoring. That's done. Bids are opening Thursday for phase two. Phase two will be installation of the pipe to drain the lake. So we'll open those on Thursday. Then I expect we'll have a cooperative agreement that we'll have to bring forward fairly shortly thereafter.
So that pipe gives us a permanence to draw the lake down if we choose to do it.
Correct.
In the
correct.
I was just asked about that conversation last night, and I said that's what I'm glad that you reinforced the recollection in mind because that's what I thought.
Yep. And we have budgeted our 25%. If you remember, we're responsible for 25% of the costs. We've budgeted our 25% for all three phases now. If you look into our 19 budget, next year's budget, we'll have the 25% for phase three. Right now, in our current budget, we've got phases one and two. 25%. So speaking of phase three, we're at about 75% design level on that. We know that we'll be increasing the jetties, so improving the fishing access, water access for folks, and enlarging the island and putting a, if you will, causeway out to the island to allow people to get out there and enjoy the lake a lot more. We're also looking at dredging a portion of the East Basin, which is a pretty popular thing to do from our public comments that we've received. So we're looking into that as well, and we'll have further discussions on that as we go. Next, Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor, contractors finishing up the punch list for phase one. Nearly done with that, and the contractor for phase two has begun, so that work is underway right now. Expect that will be all completed this summer. Again, for those of you that may not remember, phase two is everything that's going to make it look like a park. That's the trails, that's the gathering areas, the interpretive components, that's everything that makes it function and look like a park. Let's see. I mentioned earlier under the auditor's report that we did finally receive a notice that our $100,000 federal pass-through grant has been awarded to the state. Now we're going through the paperwork with the state to get that transferred to us. That was the last piece of the pie in acquiring the Jordan wildlife area. So when you think about that, again, you've heard me say this before, but that project is an $880,000 project. And we've got a return on that of 1 to 88. And so if you think about that, that was worth pushing it back a couple years to get that. We'll have $10,000 in it total from local taxpayer funds. And so that's incredible testament to how much local desire there is to bring areas like that on. And so it's really exciting. We were able to get several large grants for that, and it'd be really exciting to get that open. You'll hear more from us, but we're expecting to coordinate a grand opening and kind of an event there, probably in August is when we'll get that planned. So,
and let me just weigh in for just a second here, because to me it underscores the importance of kind of two opposing forces at work to get projects like this done. First, we have to operate where time is of the essence in terms of doing the things that we have to do. When I say we, I mean conservation. Doing the things that have to be done in order to put together the possibility of a project like this. And that is, we have to get our stuff done. There's not a lot of flexibility there. Then we have to show unbelievable patience in letting everybody else do their work on their time frame, even though we had to do our work on a set time frame, in order to get to the end where we can have a almost $900,000 project that costs the people of Story County $10,000. You don't get that done without extreme diligence from conservation staff putting the whole project together, and then unbelievable patience on the back end as we wait for it to all come together. We see the same thing with the Corps of Engineers round. It's an exercise in do everything we have to do right now immediately, and then have unbelievable patience while everybody else does what they do.
Right. Very good. Very good. So, and right on the heels of the Jordan acquisition will be another acquisition for Carroll Prairie. And we expect that those will happen both in August or thereabouts. And I'll make sure you're all aware of the dates as we get closer. So, other than that, this weekend officially kicks off camping season, and we've got just an incredible response for campers. Both campgrounds are very busy. Rolled out registrations for the first time this year, or reservations, the ability for folks to do online reservations for camping. And that's just been exceptionally well received. That folks love doing that, and so we got quite a bit of a bolus on camping fees as a result. So that's being really well received, and people enjoy that. The guarantee that they don't have to, they don't have to get there, say a Tuesday to have a site. Number one, and number two, that they're just guaranteed the site. So that's tremendous for folks. School trips. If you've been out to McFarland Park or any of our other large parks, you know that we've been in school trip season, and that's finally winding down now. And with that, we'll have a little bit of a lull in our public component of EE until we get into the summer camps. And registrations for those are going really well. We've got lots of camps that are filling up very quickly. So that's really all I'm going to say. I'm going to hand it over to Jessica. But before I do that, we talk about the financial aspects of that one facility that we're working on, but we raised in the neighborhood of $100,000 just in private contributions for that wildlife area, which is significant. And we cannot do that, as you guys are well aware, we cannot do that without a very vibrant community engagement program and to get involved with folks, to get have civic organizations and private citizens involved in their own conservation work, because as you know, conservation board, you and the conservation board here to serve our citizens. And I tell you what, the conservation board recognizes that wholeheartedly and recognizes the importance of a very robust engagement program with communities. And so we couldn't be happier with the woman sitting here to my right that's helped us with that and is doing a tremendous job with outreach. That's just critical to what we're doing. One thing that I'll comment on, one more thing before I hand it over to Erica, is she was at the helm with bringing us up to speed with Service Enterprise. And I'm not sure if she's going to talk about that or not. But
not today.
No, she wasn't going to. So I'll just be real quick with that. Service Enterprise is, if you will, it's a national certification program for essentially it's governments or nonprofit agencies that utilize community support, community engagement, and utilize it to the highest level that they can in the organization. So, yeah, we can always improve it. We're not done. We can always make improvements. But Erica, together with the Volunteer Center, led us through this program, and now we are certified. And we were the first conservation program. In fact, we might be the only conservation program certified.
I think we were the 11th organization in the state of Iowa, if I remember right.
So it's a program that kind of started on the West Coast and is moving across the country. And it's a program that is being more and more looked to by funders in them making funding decisions. So we have one local funder, local being Iowa funder, that has now integrated that into their how they review applicants is if they are Service Enterprise, then they get more credit for funding. So it's incredible, and we're really happy to have gone through that, and Erica led us through it. So I will stop at that, and Erica can explain our efforts on social media and again, how we utilize that to help us with the community engagement.
Erica, before you get going, I would just like to ask Mike, as far as we had in recognition, you know, breakfast out, not breakfast, just a thank you to your department here. And you're in the process of changing out flooring and windows and whatnot. Could you just give us a little bit of an update where you're at on that now?
Yeah, I believe so the flooring is all done in the Conservation Center. Now we're in the process of windows, and I think that, you know, facilities management has been coordinating that. I should have a better answer for you on the timeline. I think they've had several contractors out to take a look at it. They've had difficulty reaching some contractors and getting quotes from them, but I believe they've collected the quotes they need now and are ready to move forward. I just don't know, have a specific date for you.
All right, that's enough. Thank you. I just know that we were moving to do it, and that was because of the outsides of the windows and whatnot. So,
good.
Good.
Thank you.
Thanks. Erica.
Hello. Good morning. Thank you for having me today. Like Mike said, I'm going to be speaking about the social media efforts that we've been doing, and Mike said the science behind it. I'm not sure that that's the right word, but as Leanne, as Leanne probably knows just as well, it is intentional, the things that we put out on our social media platforms. So today I'll be speaking about the four platforms that the Conservation Department is currently using, which are these four here. If at any point you have questions during my presentation, just shout them out. There will be a lot of graphs and statistics and things, so just let me know if you have a question. I'll start with Facebook, which is kind of the grandfather of all of the social media platforms. Just about everybody and every business has a Facebook account. And it's the largest of the platforms that we use, 2 billion monthly active users. Some other just quick statistics that you might find interesting. 40% of Facebook users have never liked a page. So just because, you know, your number of likes on your Facebook page isn't going up doesn't mean that people aren't watching what you're doing. time spent on Facebook is on a downward trend at the moment, a slight downward trend. I think that's just a function of all of the other social media platforms that are available to people. And something also interesting is that 85% of people watch videos on Facebook with the sound off.
So if you're going to post a video that you might think is really awesome and you don't get any engagement, probably because no one bothered to listen to what it was you were saying.
Did they happen to say on that statistic? Is that because they don't know, remember to turn it on and off, or it's a deliberate choice?
I think it's a deliberate choice. I know I'm one of those people.
I'm one of those.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
It's got to be a special video to get me to turn on the sound. Yeah.
So the graphs are kind of hard for you to see, but the one. The bigger one on the right is our specific demographics for our Facebook page for conservation. You can't really see the ages too well, but the bar that is the largest is
The 35 to 44 age group. So you can see that makes up a big bulk of our Facebook users or followers. You can see across the top you get statistics for your fans, people who follow your page but don't like it, people that you reach, people that engage with you on your page. So there's a lot of information on our social media platforms. It's really helpful when we're trying to decide what to post. You'll also notice that most of our fans are women. 68% of our fans are women on Facebook, and most of them are in that 35 to 44 year old range. Contrasted to the little graph on the left, that's overall what users of Facebook are. And again, I apologize, the numbers are not legible, but the one on the far left, that's 18 to 24. So that still makes up the bulk of Facebook users, but doesn't reflect who we're engaging with on our Facebook page. Other statistics that we get, you can see... You can't really see. The graph on the top left shows that we get information about what kinds of posts are most popular. So you can decide whether you're going to do a post that's a photo or a video or just a link to something. You also get information about when your fans are online. So you can time your posts to coincide with when people are most likely to see it. So if you've ever been watching our Facebook page and you see that something gets posted at 9 o'clock at night, I'm not sitting on my computer posting stuff at 9 o'clock at night. We can schedule those things to happen at the times that we want to. And we can also see who is nearby, if they have location services turned on their phone. We
have information about who physically, geographically is near us. Many of our fans are in the Crimel Park. Our top age group is the 18 to 24-year-olds. And you also get other information about when page
likes happened. Was it based on a post that you did? Was it based on a recommendation that someone made? Or was it an ad that you ran? Just until very, very recently, we were not doing any paid promotions on Facebook. The reason for that is because the algorithm that governs Facebook changed.
And it changes all the time. But in January, a big change happened. A lot of nonprofits and government organizations are seeing the effects of that. It made it harder for us to reach the people that we were reaching for without having to pay to reach those folks. And when they made that change, they gave the following pieces of advice to brands or businesses or organizations. And it was on them to increase your ad budget, not to have an ad budget, but to increase your ad budget. And some other pieces of advice to get more engagement that we're exploring as well. Facebook Live videos are one of those things that they recommended we do, so we've been trying some of those.
And who is they? Facebook itself or outside?
Yep.
Isn't it amazing that Facebook would encourage you to increase your advertising budget?
Right. I'm shocked.
But to kind of give an example of what I'm talking about, I pulled up posts that have been really popular within the last year or two. So let's see. The fourth one down, it happened in April of 2017. And this little blurb, it shows it as Aaron Shane and Autumn Geese. But the title of one of the photos, when we posted all of our photos that were submitted to the photo contest. And that's usually something that drives a lot of engagement and excitement. We can see that we reach a lot of people, over 4,000 people, and people spent a lot of time looking through those pictures and engaging with our page, almost 6,000 clicks on all of those.
Sorry, could you move the microphone to her? Her microphone is going black out. Thank you.
So a lot of people spent a lot of time on our page. Contrast that with the second from the bottom, posted April 17th, 2018. Again, this is when I posted the whole album with all of our photos. We didn't reach 2,500 people. Wow. And only 600 times were people clicking around in the pictures. So a huge change in just a year, and I attribute that to how the algorithm changed.
Popped up on fewer people's pages.
Right. Yeah. Some other statistics that you get for each post. You can see how many times it was shared. You can get a lot of information. And we watch this to make sure we're posting things that people want to see. Have any questions about Facebook before I move on? Okay. The next one is Instagram. It's not as big as Facebook. It is owned by Facebook, so there's a lot of similarity between how those platforms function. The average age of a user is increasing. It used to be that Instagram was kind of the younger social media platform. And there still is a lot of, the bulk of the users are younger age. 76% of American teens use Instagram. And just behind that, all those teens also have a smartphone. So basically, anyone who has a smartphone probably has Instagram, as well as businesses. A lot of businesses are using Instagram, and that's surprisingly who we are engaging with a lot on that platform, in addition to individuals. A lot of different area businesses or organizations, which is helping us as we continue to build partnerships in the community. And other tips, if you put a location on your post, it reaches more people, so we've been experimenting with that. Again, women are mostly making up our followers, 64% women, 36% men. We don't have many followers on this platform, only just shy of 400. But really just in the last couple months is when I've started really spending time on this platform, and it is our fastest growing platform by far. Just in the last month, we've had over 100 people follow us on Instagram, so excited about this one. Other statistics you get, again, most users are in the 25 to 44 year old range. Most of them are in Ames. And some examples of our posts. We try to use hashtags and, mention other community partnerships if they exist for that post. So just other tools that you can use to get your post seen by more people that don't already know about you. People really like baby turtles.
I like baby
turtles.
That's a snappy turtle.
That was a painted turtle.
Okay.
Yep. No. and then Twitter, smaller still, only 328 million active monthly users. But this one is interesting because it's a platform that you can use to connect with people that you need to know rather than ones that you already know. So you can really pinpoint your message and target who it is that you want to see it by mentioning other individuals or organizations. Again, this is one that I've not spent as much time on, and I'm trying to spend more time on, but this platform is still growing steadily. Can't really see that either. Again, 25 to 44-year-olds make the bulk of our user group, but males eke out the females for who's following us, so I thought that was interesting. I mean, you also get information about what your users are interested in, so business, tech news, that kind of thing, so you can tailor your message that way.
Lastly is YouTube. There are a lot of people on YouTube, and a lot of people prefer to look at videos this way rather than, you know, having a paid TV service. 6 out of 10 people prefer online video platforms to live TV. And once people are on YouTube, they stay on there for a really long time. And overwhelmingly, a majority of YouTube users are male. Those user percentage by age are not specific to our page. That's just across the board, the makeup of YouTube users. We don't have a lot of subscribers by any means on our YouTube channel, but by comparison, Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation only has 16 compared to our 5. So people are still watching the videos. They're just not following or subscribing to the channel.
YouTube is the closest thing to old school surfing the internet. Back in the days when the internet was new and you'd get on there and just, you had no idea where you were going.
Right.
You didn't know place. YouTube kind of fills that
definitely
gap now.
Definitely.
You don't have any idea what you're going to see next. You know?
Yep.
I find it interesting it being overwhelmingly male.
Mm-hmm.
Although my husband has watched a lot of Russian car crashes.
One way we monitor all of this is through a tool called Hootsuite. It allows you to kind of get a snapshot of what is going on across all of your social media platforms instead of having to go out to each one individually and monitor it. So you can get a better idea of what activity is going on your page or what people are saying about you. So that has been helpful. Oops. And then moving forward, we have some goals in mind. Obviously, we want to continue to use social media to strategically engage more people, not only with us, but with nature as a whole, and increase the diversity of Story County Conservation Park users and supporters. Both of those are goals out of our strategic plan. One thing that I really would like to work on this summer is getting our seasonal staff to help kind of create content. They're already documenting a lot of their experiences throughout the summer with us and posting to social media anyway. So if I can get them to use a hashtag so it's trackable, then we can kind of market that and hopefully spread the word. Still want to focus on attracting a younger audience. Maybe that means exploring other social media platforms that are out there. And still continue to dedicate a lot of time to Instagram and YouTube rather than just focusing on Facebook. So that's what I have to share with you guys today.
Well, Mike said it's starting out. We need to underscore you're doing a fantastic job. So we're so fortunate that we've got the conservation department that we have, top to bottom. And, Mike, we could sit here and talk for a long time about the awards and recognition that you and your staff have received, exemplifying what I just said. But something we didn't always do a good job at that I'm so excited that we're ramping up is letting people know what a good job we do and the things that we offer. And I expect, Erica, that sometimes you get frustrated that things aren't growing like you'd like to see them grow from your staff. Know that we're astronomically ahead of where we were before you started down this trail, and it is truly drops in a bucket. I mean, you're filling that bucket up for us, and once it goes, the impact it's going to have, I don't think can be overstated. So thank you so much. I appreciate the intentional approach, if not scientific, intentional approach that you're taking toward this, and I believe that what you're doing is an absolute model, not only for other conservation areas, but other governmental entities and not-for-profits. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Questions or comments?
You do a fine job telling your story. I look forward to seeing what a year's time does to your followers.
Thank you.
Erica, do you ever get an opportunity to connect with some of the other departments that are using social media and to exchange information, exchange ideas?
We haven't met necessarily to exchange ideas or strategies, but we interact with each other on social media platforms.
Okay.
So yesterday, Jessica Reynolds came out and spoke to our summer staff, and we talked about it on Twitter. So there are connections being made that way.
Okay.
Thanks. It's always nice when people can share between departments or areas. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Super. Mike, anything else?
Yes.
Thank you, guys. Good job.
Thank you.
Next, public forum number two, opportunities for members of the public to address anything you'd like to address. We are just before noon, so have at it. Anybody? Seeing no one move to the microphone, liaison assignments. I got no idea. I'm going to start with Marty. Loris.
Just a couple of things to note. One is probably a follow-up. And obviously, we didn't have any spring quadrant meetings this year. And at least I was wondering if maybe as we head in before the fall quadrant meetings, if there could be some kind of workshop or something where all the staff could weigh in. And I don't know, Leanne, if you would coordinate something like that, or if that'd be Deb or whatever. I'm just thinking if we're going to do fall quadrant meetings, I know some issues had come up about how many staff, how many scheduled, that kind of thing.
You come and talk to us, or are you going somewhere else?
I'm telling him to go get his picture taken because she's waiting for him.
Oh, okay.
Mile
three.
Okay,
all right.
Forget him, Mike.
Yeah. With the rain that really delayed
the... Pull the microphone over to you.
Oh, I didn't
know. It got moved.
The rain that delayed the planting this year, I was just batting some ideas with Marty as to when the best time would be to hold the rain water meetings. Uh-huh. We were talking the later part of June.
Okay.
And so I was still hoping to get those done. Now, if the board would like to... This spring has been really unique. I mean, you're just now just starting to see the 3 inches of corn above the ground. And I didn't want to try and schedule anything even early June.
Okay.
Not knowing what was going to happen. They would have to go back and possibly replant or anything. But we wanted to not do spring ones, spring, summer ones. That's fine too.
But thank you. I was kind of wondering, looking for more information. And, Then last week I spent a lot of time in meetings. I think one of the most encouraging things that I heard last week was on Friday in the Children's Wellbeing Collaborative. And even though the grant ends on June 30th, there's a request for all the counties to kind of try and figure out what people would do themselves. And so I talked to Carla briefly and talked to Deb. I said I thought Story County could host a meeting for people, host as in provide the place, and help send out some invitations, and I'd buy the water personally. But this would just be a discussion meeting about whether Story County wanted to have form its own steering committee going forward in implementing some of the suggestions that have come out of the collaborative. So I think those are the two key things.
Okay. Good. Let's see. I spent all week or almost all week in Washington, D.C. Deb Shildroth was along with, I think, 15 or 16 other people from Story County. It was, as always, it was a really positive trip, lots of great meetings. And I'm sure there will be more to come with more detail on those meetings and hopeful impacts for those. Anything else for us today?
Nothing.
Take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.